Part 2. Seeking Destiny. The winds of change have lifted the hair from my neck. They tickle me and tease me, and take me to a place unexpected. My road has wound in circles these last years, from hearth and home to the open road, to trying to build anew with a group that was not of my own heart. And now the circle completes, back to where I began, it seems. But not so. For these friends returned are not the friends I knew. They are very much akin in heart and duty, of course, and surely recognizable to me, but yet they are different, in that they have seen a new light and way, a new perspective on mortality and death, and on the meaning of life itself. This attitude manifests itself most subtly, usually, but I see it there, in every Brunner grumble, in every catty breed confidence, in every Regis fight, and in every Wolfgar laugh. And now I see it in myself as well, for these last decades, after the passing of catty breed and the others, and even before Brunner fell in Gontalgrim, I was restless, and quite content to be. I wanted to know what was around the next bend, any bend in the road, be it the quest to find Gontalgrim, or the years afterward when I led the band of Artemis and Treri, Dahlia and the others. My home was in my memories. I neither wanted nor needed a replacement, for those memories were enough to sustain me and nourish me. I nearly lost myself in that long and winding journey to that ultimate conclusion, and would have, I know, had I not refused Dahlia on that hillside in Icewind Dale. There again I found myself. And so in the end I survived. Drizzt Do'Urden, this person I strive to be, survived the trials. And now I find myself on the road of adventure again with Catty Bree and Brunner. And could anything be better? Ours is a noble quest, as much so as the one that reclaimed Mithril Hall that century and more ago. We march with songs and the cadence of dwarven boots, under the flags of three kings, and with the flagons of 5,000 grinning dwarf warriors. Could anything be better? Perhaps so, if Wolfgar and Regis were still with us. And truly I miss them every day. But at the same time I am happy for them, and hold confidence that we will meet again. I noted the sparkle in Regis's eyes whenever he spoke of Donala Topolino. And I can only applaud the road he has chosen, and only be happier that mighty Wolfgar walks that road beside him. Woe to any ill-intentioned rogues who cross the path of that formidable pair. They will come back. I have fretted on this for a while, but now I am convinced. This is not like the time long ago when Wolfgar abandoned us to return to Icewind Dale. Nay, on that occasion I doubted that we would ever see Wolfgar again, and we would not have, none of us, except that Regis and I ventured to Icewind Dale. Even then the reunion was strange, for when Wolfgar left us those decades ago, he did so emotionally as well as physically. That is not the case this time. They will come back, and we will be victorious in Gontalgrim. These things I believe, and so I am at peace, and excited and anxious all at once. And nervous, I admit. And I am surprised by that truth. When we rejoined together atop Kelvin's cairn that dark night, there was only elation. And as the shock of my friends returned from the dead wore away, I was left simply giddy, feeling blessed and fortunate beyond what anyone should ever expect. In the early days back together, even when we returned to the Silver Marches and found ourselves embroiled in a war, we all had the sense that the companions of the Hall survived on time borrowed from the gods, and that our end, for any of us, could come at any moment, and it would be all right because we had found each other again and had left no words unsaid. Even though my four friends had begun a new life, living two decades and more with new identities, with new family, new friends, and for Regis at least, a new love in his life, our existence was to be enjoyed and appreciated day by day. And it was. All right. Soon after, Catty Bree, Brunner, and I had come to believe that Wolfgar and Regis had fallen in the tunnels of the Upper Dark on our journey back to Mithril Hall. For months we had thought them lost to us forevermore, that they had journeyed once again into the realm of death, this time not to return. And it was all right. The pain was there, to be sure, but still, we had been given the great gift of time together once more, and in the knowledge that our companionship was indeed rooted in mortality. I cannot emphasize that gift enough. Many times I claim that a person must know he is going to die, must recognize and accept that basic truth of life in order to defeat his fears and press on with a true sense of purpose in life. My friends knew that, and know that now better than most. They have seen the other side. And when they are called again from this life, they go with acceptance, each, and not because they know a truth of immortality and eternity beyond the mortal coil. Indeed, Wulfgar and even Regis remain skeptical of the gods, even after their ordeal in the enchanted forest of Iruladun. A close brush with death, indeed their decades in the clutches of something other than life, has given us all both urgency and acceptance. It is a blessing twice over. Perhaps because of the passage of time, perhaps because of our victories and survival in the War of the Silver Marches, but now I have come to sense a change. That borrowed time seems less to me as I grow comfortable with the return of my friends, alive and vibrant, and hopefully with many decades ahead of them. Indeed, even discounting the possibility of an enemy blade cutting one of us low, Brunner could well outlive me in natural years. Or our end, any of us or all of us could come this very day or tomorrow. I've always known this, and make it a part of my daily routine to remind myself of it. But now that the newness of my friend's return has worn off, now that I have come to believe that they are here, they are really here, as surely and tangibly as they were when I first met Catti Bree on the slopes of Kelvin's Cairn, and she introduced me to Brunner and Regis, and then Wulfgar came to us when he was defeated in battle by Brunner. It is new again. It is fresh. And it is, in terms of an individual's life, lasting. And so I am nervous about going into battle, because now I am seeing the future once more as the comfort of home and of friends, and my Catti Bree, all about, and it is a future I long to realize. In a strange way, I now see myself moving in the opposite direction of Wulfgar. He has returned carefree, ready to experience whatever the world might throw before him, in battle, in game, and in love. He lives for each moment without regret. Fully without regret, and that is no small thing. Consequence is not a word that now enters Wulfgar's conversation. He has returned to life to play with joy, with lust, with passion. I try to mirror that exuberance and hope to find that joy and know my lust in my love for Catti Bree. But while Wulfgar embraces the life of the free-spirited nomad, a rapscallion even, finding adventure and entertainment where he may, I find myself suddenly intrigued by the permanency of hearth and home, a husband, among friends, a father, Drizzt Do'Urden. Chapter 8. A Seat of Reverence. The tunnels did not seem cramped to them. The low ceilings and tons of stone above them did not bow their shoulders with apprehension, for the Delzoon dwarves, from the moment they entered the tunnel from the rocky dale, traveling down the long and winding subterranean corridor that Brunner told them would take them to the outer wall of Gontalgrim, the way, the smell, the aura, all spoke not of danger or foreign discomfort, or the threatening hush of a waiting predator, or the shadows of death fluttering all about. To the dwarves of Delzoon, the tunnel spoke only of home, their most ancient and hallowed home, the home of their earliest ancestors, the hearth that had spawned the smaller fires of Citadel Felbar and Citadel Adbar, Mithril Hall and Kelvin's Cairn, and all the other Delzoon kingdoms scattered about Faerûn. This was the home fire. The true home fire, the spawn of the dwarven race on Toril, the greatest and earliest forge that had propelled their kind to unparalleled heights of craftsmanship and reputation. There were monsters all about, they knew. They could smell the stench of kobolds and goblins and other less sentient denizens of dark places. Carrion crawlers with waggling tentacles and giant cave spiders who would suck the juices from a living victim and leave the pruned corpse for the vermin. The dwarves could smell them or hear their distant skitters, but the dwarves didn't fear them, any of them. They were an army of Delzoon warriors, unified in stride and strike and letting come whatever may come. It didn't matter. They were on the path to Gontalgrim, and so to Gontalgrim they would go, and woe to any man or monster who dared to step in their way. Despite the smells and scat and other goblin kin and monster sign, the dwarves only found a few skirmishes over the next few days, mostly with carrion crawlers, which were apparently so confident in their paralyzing poison, or simply so stupid, that they didn't comprehend the numerical disadvantage. A few dwarves were put into that temporarily paralyzed state by the swatting tentacles. But before the creatures could crawl up and begin a meal, hordes of other dwarves were there to take up the fight and overwhelm the beasts. So not a dwarf was lost in the trek into the Underdark, and only one injured, and that from a fall, with a wound that the clerics easily mended. Bruna remained near the front of the line all the way down, with Drizzt and Catti Bree and the four dwarves that made up his personal bodyguard. Beside Bruna came King Emerus and his entourage, led by Ragged Dane, along with King Conorad and Bungalow Thump. So long was the dwarven line that when Bruner at last entered the lowest chamber, the antechamber to Gontalgrim's castle-like wall, the trailing dwarves were not even halfway down the long descending tunnel from the surface. Drizzt, Catti Bree, Bruner, and Athrogate all knew this cavern, full of stalagmites and leering stalactites, with many structures hollowed as guard stations, ancient ballistae and catapults rotting in place. They stood on the landing before the tunnel exit, at the western end of the cavern, looking over the low stone wall. Just enough illuminating lichen was scattered about for them to peer through the forest of rock mounds and see the dull reflections off the black water of the underground pond. Across that foreboding water was a small beach of fine sand, fronting the stone wall and the doorway to the throne room.
"Do you feel it?" Bruner
asked Emerus, when the old king moved up to stand beside him.
"Aye,"
Emerus answered.
"In me heart and in me bones, at the other end of this very cavern, across that water sits the wall, and just inside the throne of the dwarf gods," Bruner explained.
Despite the dim light, King Emerus's eyes sparkled, and he had to work very hard just to draw in his breath.
"We'll be starting our work right in here," Bruner told them all. "I'm thinking that we fix these guard posts and might be building a bridge across that water."
"One easy to drop," Catti Bree offered.
"Aye," said Emerus. "If them drow are up high already in Gontalgrim, then we'll start our digging in right here so they can get the whole of the army in their ugly faces."
He paused and looked at Drizzt, then shrugged and offered a slight bow. Drizzt, surely not offended, merely chuckled in reply.
"Bring in a swarm of gutbusters," Bruner instructed Bungalow Thump. "Ye take your boys down first and spread the breath of the place to the first mounds. Torchline with none out of sight and all ready to fight for them next to 'em."
Bungalow Thump surveyed the place for a moment.
"Wide cave,"
he said doubtfully.
"Me and me boy'll be with ye,"
Ambergris remarked, elbowing Athrogate, who snickered and shoved her back.
"Grab them wild dwarfs from Adbar if you need 'em," said Bruner,
but Bungalow Thump shook his head.
"They're all up near the back," he explained.
Bruner looked to King Emerus, the two of them shaking their heads knowingly.
"King Conorad's sure to miss all the fun, and his boys'll find themselves in the back for his absence,"
Emerus said. He turned to Ragged Dane and nodded.
"I'll have enough of me boys to take the right half of the room,"
Ragged Dane told Bungalow Thump, and the two rushed off back up the tunnel to gather their forces. With great precision, 200 hustling dwarves soon stretched along the cavern floor, wall to wall in front of the stairway exit. On a call from Bungalow Thump, scores of torches went up in fast order. The long line began its steady move, sweeping clean the cavern in front of them, while more dwarves filled in from behind.
those second dwarves formed strike teams, and whenever the leading dwarves crossed a stalagmite mound that had been worked with stairs, one of those strike teams was fast up them to scout the nest and secure the post. Now Drizzt did go out to scout as well, moving into the shadows in front of the front line, picking his careful and swift way but never getting too far in front. As they at last neared the water, the drow, with his keen low-light vision, thought he spotted a pair of figures slipping in through the open door of Gontalgrim across the way, but he couldn't be certain.
"Secure the bank," Brunner told them when he too came up to the pond's edge. "And keep yourselves ready. Dark things in here. And in the water, too, not to doubt."
"Engineers'll be in tomorrow," Emerus said quietly to Brunner. "It'll be a bit afore we can get a bridge across."
"And yourself ain't for waiting?"
Brunner asked, and Emerus shrugged. Brunner pointed down the bank, where the hollowed cap of a giant mushroom sat in the darkness, the boat Brunner and his friends had made when they had come in for Thibeldorf Puente a year before. It was right where they had left it, Brunner believed, and that seemed a good thing.
"Set a ferry?" Emerus asked. "Dark things in the water, but I..."
Brunner replied. "The Harples can get many across in short order," Caddybree said, moving to join the pair. "Old Kipper is well versed in the art of the dimension door." The work began immediately, setting a brigade of archers with crossbows on the bank directly opposite the door, while Caddybree ran back to fetch Penelope, Kipper, and the other Harples. Skilled crafts dwarves soon arrived with their tools and logs they had dragged down from the forest above. Within a few hours, as more dwarves swarmed into the huge cavern, the Harples and Caddybree erected magical gates, and several score dwarves, including the kings and their bodyguards, stepped through the portals onto the beach across the way. Work on the ferry began immediately, with beams set in place on both sides of the small pond, turnstiles dug in and secured, and with Penelope Harple taking magical flight, carrying the heavy rope from one side to the other. While the ferry was being completed with several more mushroom-capped boats fashioned, dwarf clerics cast magical light onto stones and threw them into the water along the ferry route. Tightly packed schools of fish flitted from the illumination and hovered in the shadows just beyond the light, and those few adventurers who had been this way before understood the danger of those vicious cavefish. And so the Harples and Caddybree stood guard. And whenever one of those schools encroached upon the lighted path, a lightning bolt greeted them and sent them scurrying, or had them floating up to the surface, stunned or even dead. Strong-shouldered dwarves cranked the turnstiles, and tough warriors carried stones across and set to building defensive walls outside the opened door to the upper hall of Gontalgrim. Despite their impatience, prudence ruled the day. And it was many hours before the first team of gutbusters rushed through the small tunnel and into the great throne room. And that only after Penelope Harple and Kipper had sent magical disembodied wizard eyes into the chamber to scout in front of them. At long last, King Brunner Battlehammer and King Emerus Warcrown and King Conorad Braunanvil strode side by side into that hallowed chamber. They had come not as explorers, as with Brunner's first journey here, in another time and another life. They had come not in desperation, as with Brunner's second visit, when he sought the counsel of the dwarf gods, nor to save a friend, as Brunner and the companions of the hall had done to rescue Thibeldorf Puente. They had come as conquerors now, heirs to the throne of Delzoon. Brunner kept his eyes on Emerus as they walked to the dais down to the right, where sat the throne of the dwarf gods. Brunner had been here several times, of course, and so he knew what to expect, both with this enchanted and ancient throne he had sat upon before, and with the two graves set not far to the other side of it, the cairns built for himself and for Thibeldorf Puente when they had both fallen in Gontalgrim. He remembered his first journey into this chamber, when he had first come to know for certain that he had indeed found this most ancient Delzoon homeland. He noted the same expression he knew he had worn upon the face of his companion, Emerus, and surely Brunner understood. He nodded, and he kept staring at the old king of Citadel Felbar, and he let Emerus's sense of wonder and reverence bleed back to him, reminding him again of his own feelings on that first journey to this ancient and hallowed ground.
"That's the throne?"
Emerus asked, his voice shaky.
Aye, and beyond it's me own grave. And that a Thibbledorf Puent, me battle rager,
Brunner answered.
Ye go and put your bum on the chair, and ye'll know if your heart's pleasing Moradin.
Ragged Dane came huffing and puffing up to the pair just before they reached the throne.
When I put me arse in that seat, and me heart wasn't straight with the callings of the gods, the chair tossed me almost to the wall,
Brunner explained.
Ah, but ye'll get your thoughts sorted out quick enough when ye put yourself in that throne.
Can any of us go and sit then?
Royal blood, Brunner replied. So I'm guessing, though I'm thinking that any who found the favor of Moradin would be welcomed.
His voice trailed off when Ragged Dane motioned ahead with his chin, and Brunner turned to watch King Emerus moving for the seat. Without hesitation, the old king turned and plopped himself down on the throne. He slid back comfortably and placed his hands firmly on the burnished arms, grabbing tightly. King Emerus closed his eyes. His breath came easy, his shoulders slumped in relaxation, as if all the tension was flowing out of his body. Ragged Dane put his hand on Brunner's shoulder, as much to support himself as to comfort the dwarf he had known as Little Arar.
If King Emerus Warcrown's life had ended at this very moment, he would have died a happy dwarf. Sitting on that throne in these hallowed halls seemed to Emerus to be the crowning achievement of a dwarf life well lived. He felt at peace, more so than ever in his long life, for a sense of divine contentment washed through him. All of his major life decisions, like abandoning Felbar to undertake this journey, rolled through him. Not all had been correct, he had learned, sometimes painfully. But he sensed now that the gods of the dwarves, Moradin, Clangadin, and Dumathoin, were satisfied that Emrys Warcrown had made those choices, right and wrong, with good intent and a proper sense of dwarven purpose. An image of the forge of Gontalgrim came clearly to him, as well as one of the small tunnels leading to the antechamber that housed the fire primordial that gave the forge its supernatural heat and magical energy. Emerus wore a wide smile, but only until he sensed, or feared, that the throne had shown him that place in his mind's eye because he would never see it physically. For he realized then that the dwarves were in for a long and bitter fight here, and that to truly secure Gontalgrim would likely take them years. Longer than old King Emerus, who felt older now after months on the road, had left to live. It seemed to Emerus a distinct possibility, but this too he accepted, and was content that Moradin and the other gods of his people agreed with his decision to abdicate his throne and journey to this place. He felt their strength then, in his old and aching bones, and he heard their voices, speaking the old tongue of the dwarves, a language with which Emerus and every other dwarf alive had only cursory knowledge. Every other dwarf alive, except for the one standing in front of Emerus and watching him now, for Brunner too had heard the voices of the ancients, of the gods. A long time later, King Emerus Warcrown opened his eyes.
"Chan Ignath Drasta," he said.
"Tha?" Brunner replied.
"What are ye about, then?"
Ragged Dane asked, looking to each in turn.
"I to what?"
"King Emerus is wiser now," Brunner explained.
"Tha?"
Emerus added.
"For I'm hearing the voice of Moradin, and learning the tongue of Moradin, I?"
Ragged Dane asked. King Emerus smiled wide, then hopped off the throne, a spring in his step, and walked over to the pair. He nodded to his second and met the long gaze of Brunner. Emerus lifted his hands and placed them solidly on his old friend's shoulders, the two staring unblinkingly for a long time, sharing something they both now knew and understood, something divine and supernatural. King Emerus couldn't suppress his smile, and he began to nod.
"Lord Moradin's pleased by me choice," he said, his voice a whisper,
because if he tried to speak more loudly, his voice would surely break apart with sobs.
"You will go out to scout the upper halls?" Catti Bree asked Drizzt.
the two off to the side of the entryway just inside the throne room. They had watched Brunner and Emerus's solemn walk to the throne, had watched Emerus sit upon it.
"Brunner stays my hand," Drizzt replied. "The dwarves have decided to take the ground one finger at a time. Fully secure that taken ground, then plot ahead to the next room. We'll not leave this room until Brunner and the other dwarf leaders are satisfied that the chamber outside the wall is secured, or that this hall too has proper defenses set in place." The sound of hammers and stones scraping across the floor lent credence to Drizzt's claims, for work was already underway in the throne room. Side-slinger catapults were already assembled and in place on the walls of the tunnels leading to the mines, and in front of the back door, the main entrance into the formal Gontalgrim complex, heavy work was underway in constructing defensive half-walls, behind which crossbow dwarves could keep a close watch on the narrow threshold.
"Are you eager for battle?" Catibri asked. "Against your own kind?"
"Eager? No. But I accept the journey before us. Brunner will have Gontalgrim, I believe, or he will surely die trying."
"And Drizzt?"
"Owes his friend no less than that."
"So you'll die for Brunner's dream?"
"Did not Brunner forsake his divine reward for my sake? He could have gone to his gods, justly rewarded for a life well lived. But his duty to a friend turned his course. Is that not the whole point of it, of it all? If I offer my hand to another and he takes it, do I not also have his hand? We are stronger together, but only if the bond of friendship travels from both hands. I could no more forsake Brunner in this quest than you could have remained from my side when you knew I needed you, or Brunner. This is our bond, our blood, our hands joined. I only wish that Regis and Wulfgar were here, that we five would walk." He paused as he noted his wife's bemused smile.
"What is it?"
"Nothing," Catibri said lightly. "Nothing of much importance. Only that I find it amusing when I consider that Wulfgar labels me as the preachy one."
A flabbergasted Drizzt tried to respond, but his lips moved without making a sound.
"Oh, kiss me," Catibri said and moved in close, and pecked
Drizzt lightly before moving back with a laugh.
"Do you know that I love you?" she asked. "Do you believe that I would rather be here beside you in this dark place, with danger all around and battle looming before us, than anywhere else in the world, than in any garden Mialiki might fashion to my every sensual pleasure?"
She moved back in front of him again, right in front of him, her blue eyes locking his lavender orbs.
"Do you know that?"
Drizzt nodded and kissed her again.
"And we will survive this," Catibri insisted. "Our road will not end in Gontalgrim. We will not allow it."
"And then where?"
The question carried more weight than Drizzt had intended, and the sound of the blunt words gave him pause as much as they stunned his wife. For so many years, in this life and Catibri's last, Drizzt and Catibri had danced around this issue. They were adventurers, ever seeking the road and the wind in their faces. But was there more for them?
"When Brunner sits on Gontalgrim's throne, does Drizzt remain beside him?"
Catibri asked. Drizzt's hesitance spoke more loudly than any words he might have said.
"I do not wish to live again in the halls of the dwarves," Catibri bluntly added. "Nearby, surely, but this is not the place for me. I returned in the service of Mialiki, in the love of the open air, to feel the grass beneath my feet, to feel the wind and rain upon my face. I expect that I will spend many 10 days in Gontalgrim, beside my beloved Da, surely, but this is not to be my life."
"Neverwinter?" Drizzt asked, and Catibri winced. "Then where?"
"Penelope has invited us to reside at the Ivy Mansion, or anywhere in Long Saddle," Catibri said. "It is not so long a journey for Andahar and my spectral steed."
"And there you can continue your studies," Drizzt reasoned. "No better place."
"But what for Drizzt?"
"The Bitterdews,"
the Drow Ranger replied without the slightest hesitation and with an honest lightness in his voice.
"When we have found an enchantment to relieve them of their lycanthropy,
Someone will need to catch them and bring them in to receive their cure.
Who better suited to such a task as that than a ranger of Mieliki?
Noble hunting, Catty Bree agreed, her voice almost giddy with relief, now that she had openly expressed her desires, and now that she had seen Driz's sincere enthusiasm to share in her choice.
I will be here in Gontalgrim many 10 days as well. Many more than you, I expect, Drizzt did say in warning. The dwarves will not secure this place in Brunner's lifetime or my own. It will be contested ground by many, from the drow of Menzo Barons on to the lords of Waterdeep, if Lord Neverember is any indication of the greed we can expect. I intend to stand beside Brunner and Clan Battlehammer whenever they call, and even when they do not.
I would have it no other way, Catty Bree agreed. And I know the Harples will remain vigilant beside Gontalgrim.
Family, Drizzt said.
And what of your family? Catty Bree asked.
Drizzt stared at her for a long while, caught off guard, for he understood the implications of her tone.
Your wife, she clarified.
Drizzt nodded, but still wasn't sure what to make of her remark.
In the first fight for Mithril Hall, I was wounded and nearly killed, Catty Bree reminded him.
I remember it as clearly as you do.
And from those wounds, I was damaged, Catty Bree said, and Drizzt nodded again. My days as a warrior were ended,
and so you turned to the art.
My days as a mother would never be ended, Catty Bree went on.
Drizzt swallowed hard.
In this new life, I am not damaged, Catty Bree explained. My body is whole. I could take up a sword once more if I so chose, though I do not.
Are you with child? The woman gave a slight smile.
No, she said. But if I were?
Drizzt fell over her with a great hug and a kiss, suddenly wanting nothing more than to share a child with Catty Bree. He had put that thought out of his mind for so long, for in his love's other life, it could not be. And in the decades after she was lost to him, he held no desire to father a child with any other. Certainly Dahlia was not the mother Drizzt would choose for his daughter or son. And there had been no other Catty Bree. Looking at her now, Drizzt knew that there could never be anyone else for him. Not in Ovendil, not Dahlia.
We will build a wonderful life, he promised her in a whisper.
When we find the time, she replied somewhat sourly, but Drizzt put his finger over her lips to silence her.
We will make the time, he promised.
Brunner reached behind his enchanted shield and pulled forth a flagon of ale.
Bah! But you're to put the brewers out of their living,
Emerus said, taking the offered mug.
Fine ale, Conorat agreed.
Ale, mead, beer,
Brunner said with a hearty laugh.
Fine shield, then,
said Conorad, offering a toast, and the three kings tapped their flagons together. They were on the beach outside of the grand entry hall, the work buzzing around them. All of the dwarves had gained the cavern by then, filling the place in the entry hall. Already construction on the bridge across the dark pond was well underway, with the buttresses growing tall and solid. The Harples were out there assisting with the bridge, and old Kipper seemed to be having quite the time of it, easing the heavy burden of the laboring dwarves by magically lifting the heavy beams, which could then be easily shoved into place.
We should send groups back up to the surface for more logs, Conorad remarked. Can't have enough ballistae and catapults out.
Go see to it, said Emerus.
Send some Mirabarans. Tell them of the importance.
Conorad looked at the old king curiously, for Conorad too was a dwarf king and was not used to being ordered about. But Emerus gave him a solemn nod, and Conorad understood. He drained his flagon and handed it to Brunner, who laughed and threw it over his shoulder to smash against the stone wall of Gontalgrim. With a wink, Brunner reached behind the shield yet again to produce another, full to the brim, which he gave to Conorad.
You best be sending some gutbusters with the teams heading back to the sunlight, Brunner said. Still might be monsters in the tunnels.
You chose well in filling your seat when you gived up your throne,
Emerus said when Conorad had gone.
A good dwarf is that one.
His da's among the best Mithril Hall e'er knew, Brunner replied.
Ye miss it?
Emerus asked after a while.
Mithril Hall? Aye, and being king.
Brunner snorted and took a big gulp of his ale.
Nah, can't be saying that. Don't you get me wrong. If some orcs or drow took the place, I'd go straight back and kick them out, don't you doubt? For the place is air me home. But I'm liking the road. But now you're here to stay. Moradin called me back.
Emerus nodded, a most serene expression coming over his face.
Aye,
he said several times. For when he had sat on the throne of the dwarf gods, he too had felt the infusion of strength and wisdom and ancient secrets, and so he understood.
All me life I had Felbar, he said quietly. Obul took the place, and so we kicked him out. And ye know well that he'd come back again to all our misery. And all our hope,
Brunner reminded his friend.
It pained me to watch he sign that damned treaty in Garum's Gorge,
Emerus admitted.
I know it pained yourself, too. Yourself agreed with the treaty, Brunner began. Aye,
Emerus cut him short.
Had to be done. And we had to hope. We could no have fought them damned orcs without the full backing of Silvery Moon and Sunderbar, and they wanted no part of war.
He paused to gulp a swallow of ale, then spat upon the ground.
Then they come roaring back, blaming Brunner for the new war,
he said with a disgusted shake of his hairy head.
Cowards, the lot! Worse, said Brunner. Politicians!
Emerus got a loud chuckle out of that.
Ye done right, me friend, Emerus said. In the first fight with Obuld, back there in Garum's Gorge, and now again in your new life. Ye done your da and granda and all the line of Battlehammer proud, and know that the name of Brunner will e'er be toasted with reverence in Citadel Felbar.
He lifted his flagon and Brunner tapped it with his own.
And in Mithril Hall, Emerus went on, and here in Gontalgrim, don't ye doubt. And yourself?
Brunner asked.
Ye missing Felbar? Was me home all me life, said Emerus. But no, I'm not missing it now. Wishing Parson Glaive was with me, but glad he's holding the throne in me place. Nah, now,
he said, looking around at the grand construction, listening to the fall of mallet and the crank of the turnstiles, looking back at the ancient and solid wall of Gontalgrim.
Now me old heart's telling me that I've come home, me friend. Truly home.
Brunner understood, for he had felt the same way when first he had ventured into these hallowed halls, when first he had sat upon the throne of the dwarf gods. There was something deeper here than even in Mithril Hall for him, some ancient murmur of magic that touched him to the core of his Delzoon soul. He recalled his elation when he had found Mithril Hall those decades and decades ago, marching in with the companions of the hall, indeed culminating the adventure that gave the troop its name. But this was different, deeper and more solemn and less parochial. This adventure to reclaim Gontalgrim would be shared by all the Delzoon dwarves.
We're right to be here,
Emerus said with conviction.
Ye didn't see me kicking Conrad to the side and taking back me throne, did ye?
Brunner agreed.
Aye. I'm knowing the same, me friend.
Conrad came back over then, the look on his face showing that he had overheard that last comment.
Bah! But who ye kicking where? He asked. Yourself! Weren't your throne to take back? Conrad said. Was me own to keep or to give?
Aye, said Brunner. And Emerus lifted his flagon and said,
King Conrad!
And Brunner gladly joined in the toast.
But I hear your words, Conrad said. Glad ye gived your throne over?
Emerus asked, and Conrad smiled and nodded.
Only wish me da might have seen this place, the young king said. Ye planning to put your butt on the throne? Brunner asked.
Conrad stared at him, seeming unsure.
Aye, yourself's more than worthy, said Brunner. You'll see. Go and look at it, touch it and feel its power. But don't ye sit on it until me and me friend Emerus come in and bear witness.
You're sure? Conrad asked.
Sure that it'll be akin to your first time with a dwarf lass?
Emerus said with a laugh.
You'll get off it a changed dwarf, and you'll know. Aye, but you'll know.
Don't tarry, Conrad said, turning for the door.
We'll be right along, said Brunner.
He's a good lad,
Emerus noted as Conrad again left them.
Hard for me to call him that when he's standing next to yourself, for you're the one looking so much like a dwarfling.
Aye, and good riddance to me old bones,
Brunner said, toasting yet again, draining his flagon and throwing it too against the wall behind him. Emerus did likewise, but grabbed Brunner by the shoulder as the red-bearded dwarf started to rise.
I'm jealous of ye, Brunner Battlehammer,
Emerus told him.
You'll be the first king of Gontalgrim in the New Age.
Brunner stared at him, caught by surprise by the blunt words. He hadn't given the disposition of Gontalgrim much thought, not beyond waging the war to kick out the drow. There were three dwarf kings here, after all, though Brunner and Emerus could surely lay claim above the call of Conrad. But Emerus was as old as Brunner, and surely as distinguished, and so the claim now that Brunner would get the throne struck the red-bearded dwarf curiously and uncomfortably. Had Emerus seen something on the throne of the dwarf gods to incite that statement? It was clear to Brunner that Emerus believed his prediction, and Brunner saw no reason to doubt the possibility that he would become the first king of Gontalgrim. But he and Emerus were wrong.
It's here,
Kipper said, and his old eyes sparkled at the thought. He reached into his pouch and carefully, with both hands, brought forth that dark gemstone. Kipper lifted the pocked sphere, which was almost as large as a human skull, up for the others to see. Are you certain? Penelope asked breathlessly.
I can feel it through the stone, Kipper explained. Just being near the gate excites the magical energies within the orb.
What gate? Asked Drizzt, standing with Catti Bree and quite confused by the sudden change in the conversation. Penelope and Catti Bree had been chatting easily about the Bitterdews and Longsaddle's library when Kipper had bounded over with his proclamation.
Gates to connect dwarven homelands, Catti Bree explained. There was one here millennia ago,
Kipper insisted.
Magical portals?
Drizzt asked. So that one might walk from Gontalgrim to Mithril Hall?
Instantly? If Mithril Hall had one, Penelope explained. And if we've the stones to power the portals.
She reached into her own belt pouch, which was apparently one much like Regis had worn, a magical pouch of holding that could carry far more extra-dimensionally than its size and shape would indicate. She drew forth a large tome, bound in some gray leathery material and locked with silver chains.
As Catti Bree and I discussed back in Longsaddle, Penelope said, considerable thought should still be put into the wisdom of opening such magical portals anywhere near a city like Gontalgrim, which is so well known to the powers of Menzo Berenzon.
Catti Bree nodded gravely, and when her eyes met Drizzt's, he could tell she had decided to proceed.
Many hints in here about the ancient portals, Penelope went on, patting the book, and in the other tomes I've brought along.
I'm surprised you would bring such old and valuable books out of Longsaddle, Drizzt replied.
Shared extra-dimensional space, Kipper explained. The books are in a trunk in the Ivy Mansion, but Penelope can access them through her belt pouch. Quite a clever twist on simple bags of holding, don't you agree?
A twist Kipper no doubt perfected, Catti Bree noted slyly,
and the old wizard grinned with pride.
Well, if you have something like that already, could it not be used as a gate? Drizzt asked.
Could I not crawl through Penelope's pouch and out of the chest in your home?
No, no, Kipper said. This is not nearly powerful enough for such extra-dimensional walking, and the risks would be too severe, for the connection is not secured. You might fall into the Nine Hells or some other unpleasant place, or were you to bring another bag of holding along, well, if your little friend Regis tried to crawl through, his belt pouch would tear a rift to the astral plane and he would be drifting and lost forever.
But as you can surmise, Kipper has spent many years mulling over extra dimensions and teleportation and the like, Penelope said. We have come to Gontalgrim out of loyalty to our friends of Mithril Hall, and loyalty to Brunner and to yourself, and mostly to our beloved Catti Bree there, who lived among us for so many years. But we have also come with good fortune. The possibility that an ancient dwarven gate remains thrills us. Perhaps we will find it and learn from it. Perhaps we will build portals, even minor portals, to connect Mithril Hall and this reclaimed Dwarven Hall. She looked at Catty Bree and offered a little wink as she added, perhaps a door for Catty Bree to easily visit her adoptive father.
My hope has now been confirmed, Kipper said, bringing the conversation back to his original interruption. He looked into the Stone of Power again. There is a gate here, and the stone can sense it, and that will make finding it, and perhaps even finding another stone to power it, all the easier.
Drizzt wasn't about to play the contrarian, though he shared Penelope's grave doubts. Perhaps not in the near future, but at some time, surely, the Drow would likely find a way to use such a shortcut to attack yet again the Delzoon Enclave. But that was a fear for another day, Drizzt reminded himself. The dwarves will be securing the cavern and throne room for a few more days, he told the others. They will only gradually make their way forward from the throne room to the other chambers of this level. Wherever that gemstone might take you, Kipper, take care not to strike out beyond our forward perimeter. Gontalgrim is full of enemies, drow, goblinkin, monstrous animal, and even magical. You will go looking for your portal, but will more likely find yourself in a desperate fight or flight.
Agreed, Master Doerden, Kipper replied. But do prod your friend Brunner, I beg.
He replaced the stone in his belt pouch and eagerly rubbed his wrinkled old hands together, even giving a small cackle to complete the picture of his giddy energy. Drizzt was glad of the old wizard's enthusiasm, but he wasn't about to ignore the more immediate problem. Penelope had referred to Gontalgrim as a reclaimed Dwarven Hall, but it was no such thing. And with a major noble house of Menzo Berenzon dug into the lower levels, such a reality might take years to achieve. If it could be reclaimed at all.